Hello, everyone. Tracy here, your resident business rebel, and you're listening to Digital Business Your Way podcast, the show that lets true stories and insider secrets of online entrepreneur life unfold. Our business world is growing, and as an online business coach and digital product creator, I believe you didn't become an entrepreneur to grin and bear your way through business. So I'll be your guide as we drop in on coaching calls, have intimate sit-downs with online personalities you love, and discuss ideas, opportunities, and strategies circulating our online world. So pop in your earbuds, tap follow, and join me as I demystify this thing called business. Hello, hello, and goodness, you know, how are we all feeling coming into this year and all the things that are going on in our businesses and figuring out and those mixed mashes of some people resolute, some people goal, some people word of the year, all those kinds of things, you know? We're going to keep talking about just changing this culture of sales, right? So it's not a case or a wonder or a fear about what's working or where are my buyers or what's happening, yeah? Let's cut through all of that and let's keep getting to the source as we have in the other episodes, okay? So today I am curious if this sounds familiar. What you do, what problem you solve, what result they'll get, how they'll feel, right? I mean, if you've been online for more than, 5 minutes, you've seen this, been taught this, wrote this, said this, probably taught it to other people, you know, a version of this sort of framework. And it's not that it's wrong. I mean, after all, it is clean, it's logical, it's convenient, and it's definitely ripe for templates, but it's backwards for selling. Yeah. Is when you read messages that are built on this, this kind of technically correct, but somehow makes you scroll past or go, and then lose interest. Or you're looking at your own work and you're like, I want to change this, but I don't know how, right? Those are the things we're going to sort today. We'll start with a real world example of how you've seen this, you know, and I don't know, I'll grab one that I have edited for someone else that comes from like getting ready for, you know, a webinar, a workshop, a live training, et cetera, et cetera. But while you're listening, I just want you to kind of notice what happens in your body. We're not trying to analyze or fix or anything else. Just make little mental notes of how it feels and what part of you gets like peaked or not or neutral or gross or anything like that, all right? Because it's very personal. So here we go. In this training, I'm going to show you how to clarify your offer so you can attract the right clients without overcomplicating your messaging. If you've been feeling stuck or unsure how to position what you do, I'll walk you through a clear framework to identify the core problem you solve and communicate it confidently. By the end, you'll have a refined offer, clearer messaging, and a strategy that feels aligned with your strengths so you can sell with ease and consistency. All right, what happened for you when you heard that? Did any of it feel exciting or connected? Were you ready to pay attention and jump in on the training? Or did you like stop even listening to me saying it and let your mind wander because you're like, yeah, I know where this is going, right? Or you just kind of go, okay, instead of, oh. Did you start like evaluating the messaging and the pieces of it instead of imagining yourself being in this room and getting excited and enjoying what's going to happen? Because those distinctions, they matter. Like your reactions matter. And it's where someone will think, okay, interesting, but not click or buy, right? It's a good piece of information kind of thing. I mean, for me, even while I was reading it to you, I did like a head nod and a mental, good for you. I hope that works out. You know, it's that kind of piece where you're just like, okay, great. And you move on, right? It's not because, you know, the person's bad at messaging. It's because we, the audience, we're picking up on something very important here. This structure, this classic framework, It centers on the writer, not the reader. And humans don't take action based on writer's brilliance. Promise, they don't. They make decisions and they start to take action based on what's happening inside of them because of the message, right? So the message can be the inciting event, but it's not what makes them move, listen, nod, ignore, etc. It's their reaction to it that makes these things happen. Their emotions, their awareness, their fears, their context, their actual life, right? So that classic problem to solution framework, it's neat, it's tidy, but it's not complete. It's not audience first, which is what we need when we're selling things, when we're asking people to do something. And, you know, for everybody, anytime I talk about an offer, selling, etc., it's with any exchange of value. Yes, it's money, but it's also email addresses and attention, right? We're asking people to give these things to us in exchange for something else. Yeah? So that kind of classic, you know, problem solution way, it works well for content where the person is just supposed to understand the writer more or the speaker more or the one talking more, but it falls flat when we're selling, especially now, especially as people know more, do more, are in this world more. And when something is an audience first, your human, they will feel it immediately. Even if they can't like put a finger on it, you know, it doesn't matter what audience you have, whether they're in this online industry or not. It's a case of just they feel it, right? I mean, hell, in any of us that identify as women, how many times have we been like talked over, right? Or it's like, is this person even listening to me? Like I'm trying to buy something and they're just like saying shit instead of actually paying attention to my questions and what I'm asking. Right? They're just like going into a whole pitch and you're like, I just had a question about this thing. I've already said yes. I was already trying to buy it, but I just needed this thing answered. Right? That's that kind of automated process that follows these kind of frameworks that make the audience, it makes our human be like, this is not, no, it's, I really wanted it, but just not from you. Right? And you move on. So we're going to talk about where this idea comes from. Right. And it's not to, you know, throw it away or shame anybody, just to put it back into context. So you can stop, you know, blaming and worrying about these things working, not working, and what's going to happen next and what do we do now? And, you know, I mean, honestly, I'm pretty sure we had the same conversation last year at this time, but it keeps evolving. It keeps happening, right? Just over and over and over again. But these kinds of systems, they weren't designed around real human decision-making in the first place. I mean, people have been buying, gosh, for more than a millennia, right? Long before there were funnels, long before there were inboxes and conversion rates. And the original frameworks, these original concepts that shaped how we're selling in the online space, they weren't built to help sellers hit revenue goals, all right? The base concepts, the foundations that we're talking about, they were created by watching buyers, not by trying to help a seller hit a certain goal. Okay? So let's take a quick trip into history. When people talk about a buyer's journey today, it's usually in the context of a funnel, and it usually has to do with a newer to you buyer audience, right? The top of funnel, the middle of funnel, the bottom of funnel, all these kind of, what messages do they need when in order to keep them being churned through? But that's not where this concept started. The original buyer's journey was mapped out in the late 1800s. by a man with a lovely name, Elias St. Elmo Lewis. And what's important to know is concept, right? Because Lewis wasn't sitting in a boardroom trying to reverse engineer sales outcomes. He was observing, and he was observing the buyers and the people being presented to. He would actually shadow salesmen who back then were going door to door, and he would watch what the potential buyer did, not what the sellers did, right? But how the buyers were reacting to the selling. And what he noticed was a pattern, right? Of course, because we humans love our patterns. But people were experiencing different phases. They were being aware, then having consideration, making a decision. And if the decision was to take the, you know, door-to-door salesman up on the offer, then they got to experience delivery. And if the delivery of the service or good was positive, then advocacy. Obviously, it was negative. It would, you know, be, also tell people not to, right? But this awareness, consideration, decision, delivery, advocacy, it wasn't a case of how can this salesman get these things done? It was a case of this is what the buyers are reacting to, these messages, these situations, the demonstrations, et cetera, that was going on, right? It wasn't about being pushed, but it was about how their own understanding evolved. And that's the part that tends to get lost with just any time that it's more focused on a sales goal or mechanizing something, right? It wasn't a persuasion model. It was a behavior map, a way of saying, here's what humans seem to do when they're deciding whether to buy something. And notice what's missing. There was no mention of urgency tactics, discounts, scripts, closing language, any of those other things that got piled onto this concept after 1880s, right? Because Lewis wasn't asking, how do we get them to say yes faster? He was asking what's happening inside someone as they move toward a decision and an action. And that distinction, it matters, right? Because once you understand that these stages describe internal awareness first, not external action, a lot of modern selling advice will be like, that's that weird part that I'm just, it felt off. Because people don't move neatly from one stage to the next. Even during these observations back in the day, yeah, sure, a lot of them happened while the, you know, the door-to-door guy was standing there, but it was also happening after the door was shut, right? Because we circle, we pause, we go backwards, we get stuck. We have other things trying to get our attention. We have other messages coming at us, right? But none of that needs to be a problem. It's just human. And it's just the world we live in now, just like they did all the way back then, right? So let's fast forward, what, 80 years to the 1960s, where another observer enters the picture, the very famous copywriter named Eugene Schwartz. Now Schwartz, he took this idea of buyer awareness even further. And in relation to his modern age, right, of advertising, and articulated what he calls the stages of awareness, which will also sound very familiar. Unaware, problem aware, solution aware, product aware, most aware. Okay? Schwartz did not come up with these stages by inventing them. They weren't something that he said to be like, okay, what do we need to do to make this advertising campaign work and to get these more sales and to do this and this and get my bonus and all these other pieces? No, he observed the buyers. Just like Lewis did back in the 1800s, now in the 19s, we're observing buyer behavior. And it still overlapped, right? We pay attention to what people already knew before they were given an offer. What did they understand? What did they suspect? What were they skeptical of? How many other variations of the same thing were they? And how many variations of other sellers are they, right? And Schwartz noticed that people didn't respond to the same messages the same way at the same time because they weren't standing in the same place internally, right? Now, in the 60s, that was like revolutionary because it explained why all this good copy, you know, I mean, the mad days of ads, why some of it worked brilliantly in one audience, but fell completely flat in another. It wasn't because the copy was bad, the messaging, the sales messaging, right? It's not because any of that was messed up, but it was because it didn't match the human who was on the other side of it. Now, neither Lewis nor Schwartz was thinking about the seller's goals. They were thinking, you know, they weren't asking, how do we scale this? How do we optimize this? How do we increase conversions, right? honestly, not even Schwartz, who was a copywriter. It was still more a case of how do I put the right message in front of the people when they need it, right? Because they weren't trying to control them. They were just trying to make sure they had what they needed when they needed it. I mean, that's so different, right? Because what we're seeing now is that manufacturing of control and all the different tech aspects that you put into place and all the different, you know, buyer psychology that you layer on and this messaging and that and this and that. And then everybody screaming around saying, why isn't things working? That's that control, right? And that's where selling goes sideways. What people have done with these frameworks, they took something that was descriptive and turned it into operational. So instead of asking what's happening for this person and how can we make their experience better and give them what they need when they need it, people started saying, well, how do I move them to this next stage then? Because I want to get them to buy. So how can we speed this up? And I'm not saying that that's also not a natural reaction to something, but it's an opportunity for us to stop and be like, wait, which one of these is how I'm operating on? No matter what you've been taught, no matter what you've seen, you always have autonomy to be like, okay, wait, which one am I operating from? What's happening for this person and how can their experience be better? Or how do I move them quickly through and get them to buy, right? Because the moment the goal becomes movement rather than understanding, the entire relationship changes. Buyer awareness models were never meant to be climbed like a ladder. And good Lord, have people made millions by making them that way. It was a way to be noticed, to serve up what was needed when. These frameworks started getting used as levers instead. Well, if they're problem aware, then what can I say to get them to jump to buy? Solution aware, what can I say to push them through? How can I push their buttons? What colors can I throw at them? What images can I do? What words can I say? Add more urgency. Just get them to hurry up and buy. And yeah, you know, it worked, especially when it was fresher. But most of the time, especially in any industry, but especially now that we're seeing it in our own industry, the experienced, savvy, jaded buyers, it doesn't. Why? Because buyer behavior has not changed. The human has not changed. The vehicles and the layers that were placed on these different models has changed, right? We move from door to door to billboards and magazines to inboxes and sales pages, but the human is still the human. They still have multiple things going on at once, competing priorities, emotional residue from past purchases, right? A nervous system that's learned caution. We don't move in straight lines. Isn't there that saying that like nothing in nature is a straight line? Like anytime you see that, you know it's man-made, right? We bounce, we revisit, we pause, we move forward, and then sometimes back again. And then we get hit by someone else's message trying to do the exact same thing to us. And it's like, well, hang on, is this a restart? Or did this actually help me be like, no, I really want to go this way. We don't buy when someone wants us to. We buy when our internal awareness reaches a point where taking action feels possible, feels safe, feels exciting, feels hopeful, feels doable. And that's the part that a lot of these, you know, mechanisms have forgotten. So when frameworks are used to hack awareness instead of honor it, the human buyer feels bypassed. It's not always conscious, but we often feel it, right? Like when I was talking about before about how we're trying to buy something and the seller's just talking to, and it's like, what are you doing? Like that has nothing to do with what I'm saying now. It's that bypassing. And it gets flattened and it feels rushed and we feel disconnected from what we were actually after. And the enjoyment of the experience goes, right? And this is also where that classic problem solution messaging feels clunky. It's structured around the seller's needs, the clarity, the efficiency, the outcome, not the inner landscape of the human being addressed. It assumes linear progression, singular focus, and a readiness that's just often not there yet. When selling ignores these realities, conversion rates drop and people are praying again to have 1-2%, right? It's not because people are resistant. It's because they're discerning and they want you to talk to them where they are and not asking them to run over there to where you are, all right? So this problem solution style, it's incomplete. So what do we do instead? Well, we don't have to throw everything out. It's not abandoning any and all structure. We can combine what we know about buyer awareness with what we know about human decision making and bring it back to that audience first. Bring it back to the person on the other side of the screen, of the page, of the voice note, of the anything, right? And make that human first flip. So instead, the questions naturally become, well, what does work, right? And it's not about better hooks. It's not about, you know, longer lists of deliverables. It's a different starting point, an underlying foundational starting point. It starts with their experience, not your offer. It gives them what they need for where they are versus trying to push them to where you want them. Instead of leading with, what do you do? What problem do you solve? We flip the language and ask a different question. What experience will this change for them? What becomes possible because this problem is resolved, right? Because they're not buying deliverables, they're buying experiences, support, relief, understanding about what happens next and how it will look once it's a part of their life. These language shifts really start to compound and make a difference, right? So instead of what problem do you solve, which centers on the seller, think about it instead as what problem is solved for them. Yeah, centering on the audience. It's still about the problem, but what's solved for them versus solved for you. Okay, and things like fear of buying. You know, we often hear about these objections and all this and that. It's usually not a fear that has to do with you being judged, right? I mean, there's going to be comparison, but at that point, it's not necessarily human to human. It's like business to business, right? So it's not about you being judged. It's actually an underlying fear of the audience, of the buyer, of the person on the other side, wondering if they can make that change in their life or their business. Are they going to succeed this time? Is it going to work? Can they save face on this investment? How are they going to explain it to other people? Is it really going to do what they want, or are they going to have to start from scratch? Right? That's the base fear. Yeah? These distinctions, they change how we talk. They change how we listen. They change how we write. They change how your audience feels when they're deciding. Because when these shifts are in place, selling stops feeling like persuasion and it starts feeling like a translation of what someone is already sensing that hasn't articulated yet, right? How your stuff will fit naturally into what they're doing because you're translating these experiences. What problem solve for them? How is it going to help with the fears that they're worried about? Not the fear that you're worried about, right? You know, another quote that I'm thinking of that a lot of people will kind of like misinterpret or lose context on is from the very famous seller, Zig Ziglar, right? He was around back in the day, tons of books, all the things. A lot of stuff is based on his stuff. People buy on emotion and justify with logic. It's a classic line. It's catchy, but it's incomplete. It's not that people are buying just because they feel pain or desire. Right? Do I need to say that again? People don't buy just because they feel pain or desire. That's not what buying on emotion and justifying with logic means. Okay? That's order of operations. They buy seen, safe, validated, hopeful, clear, and fairly confident on what happens next, what happens working with you, what happens in their life doing the thing. Okay, that's the emotional arc of an actual decision. You have to acknowledge their current reality and honor what they've already tried, right? Which matters more than most, but that helps people not feel bypassed or overlooked or shame or wrong or guilt, right? Then we have to explain why those efforts didn't work. And again, it's not because they haven't tried all the things. It's because there was something in how they were doing it that was off, right? So you're showing them the missing key to what they want. And then once that's revealed, you introduce your offer as a way to support them finding the key, right? It's not a solution to their whole life. It's not a magic wand. It's just the next step that makes sense. All those pieces live in their designated area for humans to access when they're ready for them, right? That's why we spread our content so much. That's why some sales pages are longer than others. That's why there's different kinds of pitches and teachings and all these kinds of things, because the human that's on the other side can be anywhere in the cycle of buying, and you're trying to make sure they have what they need when they need it, right? So let's think back to that opening example, right? The one from the training, but this time we'll rewrite it to start with the human, the audience, okay? Here we go. If you've ever sat down to explain what you do and thought, this makes sense, but it doesn't sound like me, you're not alone. Most people I work with already know their offer helps. What's frustrating isn't the value, it's that the way they've been taught to describe it strips out the nuance of how their work affects people. So instead of feeling clear, they end up overthinking their words, second-guessing their message, defaulting to language that technically works but doesn't feel true. In this training, we focus on translating what actually changes for your clients into language you can say without effort. So selling feels like explaining something that finally makes sense, not performing a script. So how did that one feel compared to the other one? Did it like spark the curiosity? Because this is how you sell without pushing, without pressure, without pretending your work is something it's not, or wondering how to say what you mean, right? And how to reveal that essence of what happens. And you know, that it was intentionally a very neutral example, both the before and the after. So there's not a lot of personality in them. And you know, it was made anonymous, so you didn't know who it was, right? Those kinds of pieces. But that contrast is still different there, right? And if you need more of these kinds of like examples and you want to see like how this happens in action, there is an expanded version of this work. So you can practice, get support, and learn more, right? So if you want to actually practice this kind of thing with like your real offers and get like a new vibe out into the world, that's what the on-demand course Boost the Value of Your Offer in a Day is for. It's where we take the concepts that I'm talking about and we really break them down and apply them to any of your high touch offers, right? And then you can see how these small shifts change everything in your workflow and how you are giving like the experiences to the person buying, as well as how you're talking about it on the outside, all right? If you want more of that, the history and these guiding questions that I went through, I go really in depth in a detailed training, which is only offered after signing up for the freebie, the Work With Me page refresh, right? I'll link it down at the bottom. But either option will give you a way to experience this approach for yourself and hear more about, I just always call him St. Elmo instead of Lewis, but more about those things and seeing how it changes, you know, stuff on pages and all that kind of good stuff, all right? So if you need any of those will be there. But for now, just keep noticing how often the selling language skips over that audience perspective, all right? Including in your own, yeah? So that way we can kind of go, oh, wait, I want to change this. Notice when something feels kind of like centered or that bypassing way, or how a different starting point can change the entire tone of a conversation. Because you can do this even when you're talking to regular people in regular life by thinking about what do they need to hear versus what I need to say, okay? And just like, you know, whenever we think about those conversations, there's a balance, right? Sometimes we want our point to be heard regardless. And then other times it's like, no, what are they after? And what do they need to have heard regardless? Okay. And once you start seeing these things, you know, you can't unsee them. So in the next episode, I can go one layer deeper, and this has to do with one of the questions that came in to talk about these, you know, more into these journeys of buyers and sellers are on, like, how do they intersect? Where's the friction? How do we design our business in a way that respects both sides, right? I mean, we are in business, we need profit. Yeah. So just because we're putting the audience first doesn't mean that we're bypassing ourselves either. All right. We put the humans first and the money follows. Okay. So for now, let all of this land. And as always, ask me questions, give me comments, keep those pouring in, because selling, it doesn't get better when we try harder. It gets better when we put our audience first. All right. So until next time, be well and have some fun. Thank you for joining me here on Digital Business Your Way. Be sure to check out the show notes for all the links mentioned today. And while you're there, I'd love for you to rate and review the show. And if you have a topic or question you want me to answer, I want to hear it. Head to tracypatterson.com/AMA and ask me anything about business. If I don't know it, I'll bring it up with one of my guests. And until next week, be well and have some fun.